in Matthew chapter 5 at verse 41. If someone forces you to go 1 mile, go with him 2 miles. And I have entitled the message this morning, The Mile That Means the Most. Now, Jesus uttered many hard sayings, as they have been called. People have a difficult time understanding some of them. For example, Jesus said, if someone comes up to you and slaps you on the cheek, instead of putting up your fists in retaliation, just turn the other cheek. And if someone comes and sues you to get your shirt, instead of defending yourself in court, just give him your coat also. And then he said to them what must have been most repugnant of all. He said, if a Roman soldier comes and says to you, carry my backpack for 1 mile, then you say to him, good, I'll be glad to carry it 2 miles for you. You see, the Jewish people lived in those days under the domination of the hated invader, Rome. And the Roman law said that a Roman soldier could at any time conscript a civilian to carry his pack, his impedimenta, as it was called in Latin. And these packs were very heavy. A soldier's pack included all of his clothing, including extra footwear. It included his eating utensils, his sleeping bag, and all sorts of personal items. And maybe you were a good Jewish person, all dressed up and on your way to the synagogue for worship. Or maybe you were a businessman starting off on some important business engagement. Or perhaps you and your family were ready to go on a family outing. And all of a sudden, there is a tap on your shoulder, and a soldier gruffly accosts you and says, hey, carry my pack. And you had to stop what you were doing at once, pick up this heavy load, and then carry it for 1 mile. Now, Roman law said that you could set it down at exactly 1 mile. You had performed your duty. What Jesus said is that when you finish that mile, say to the man, could I carry it an extra mile for you, sir? And in this scenario, I think Jesus taught one of the most basic principles of life that I would ask you to focus on with me this morning. I've never preached in this text before, and it really grabbed me as I began to think about it. You see, the point is, the second mile is the mile that means the most in life. And this principle is true, I think, in the secular world and in the realm of the sacred as well. And what I want to demonstrate to you this morning is that the very principles that the Bible teaches are the most applicable principles with which to do business in our world today. In our secular society, the strongest base for principles by which to operate successfully are found in this book. And this is certainly true with regard to our spiritual life as well. Now, the first thing I would like to suggest is this, that the second mile is the mile of progress. It's the mile of progress. Let me demonstrate this from the secular world. If you just take the matter of sales, all the studies show that in the business world, the person who's willing to put in the extra effort is the person who is going to be most effective at sales. The most recent figures for sales show that 48% of all salesmen make one call and one call only on a prospective customer. Another 20% make two calls and then stop. Another 12% make three calls, then quit. That's 80%. 80% of all salesmen made only three calls last year on a customer. But the remaining 20% made either four or more calls, but they also sold 80% of all that was sold in this country last year. So you see, from just the secular point of view, from sales, if you want to know the mile that means the most, the mile of progress, it's the extra mile that the committed salesman is prepared to go. Or take the field of academics. The father of a high school valedictorian was asked how his daughter had done so well. And this is what he said. He said, well, whenever her teacher required something of her, she always did a little extra. You see, the students who make the best grades are generally the ones who do a bit more than the assignment calls for. Or think of the field of sports. Any sports figure who is successful and achieves stardom is not the one who does just the minimum, but the one who is willing to go the extra mile. One of the greatest athletes our country has produced in this century is Bob Mathias. Now, when he was 10 years old, he was an anemic, delicate little boy. He says that the doctor gave him so many liver shots that he could barely sit down sometimes. When he was 12 years old, he said to the doctor, he said, "Doctor, I don't want to go on like this. Could you write me out a physical therapy plan which will enable me to become a strong boy?" The doctor did that. And this young 12-year-old looked at the doctor, and you know what he said? He said, "Thank you, doctor. But would it be okay if I do twice as many of these exercises as you have outlined for me?" And that was the spirit of Bob Mathias at 12 years of age. And he turned from an anemic, sickly child into a world athlete who at 17 years of age was 6'2" in height and weighed 190 pounds. He went to London, England for the 1948 Olympics to compete for the USA in the decathlon, the most grueling test of an Olympian athlete. And this once anemic boy who had learned the principle of the mile that means the most ran the 100 meters in 11 seconds. He ran the 400 meters in under 50 seconds. He broad jumped more than 22 feet and he threw the javelin 166 feet, just to give you some examples. And he won the gold medal, the youngest winner of the gold in the decathlon in Olympic history. He came home and he enrolled in Stanford University. He started playing football and he led them to an undefeated season and a victory in the Rose Bowl. Now they say you can't repeat as a decathlon champion, but in 1952 at Helsinki in Finland, he won his second gold medal. Bob Mathias is the only athlete ever to win two golds in the Olympic decathlon, and he is a fine Christian gentleman. And you know what he said some time ago? He said, life is simple. Whether it's sacred or secular, if you are willing to do whatever it takes and go the extra mile, you will discover that that's the mile of progress. Now, the second mile is also the mile where we make the most significant progress in our spiritual life. We don't become spiritual giants by just sitting back and hoping it will happen any more than you become an athlete by sitting down and eating popcorn and watching TV. Someone asked Mother Teresa recently, how is it that your witness is so effective? You know what she said? She said, very humbly as she always does, well, she said, all I do is simply give everything I have to God every day. Because you see, I'm just totally sold out to the Lord Jesus Christ. Isn't that beautiful? I want you to understand this. The mile that means the most, the mile of steady progress, whether in the realm of the secular or the sacred, is that second mile. The mile of progress. In the second place, I believe that the mile that means the most is the mile of participation. The mile of participation. It's not just the mile in which you satisfy the law, but it's the mile in which you participate in what the law is intended to accomplish. Now, Jesus gave a great illustration of this in the matter of forgiveness. If you read Matthew chapter 18, verses 21 to 35, you will find there that one day he was talking about forgiveness, and Peter said, Lord, I know exactly what you're talking about. Let me tell you what happened to me. I have a friend who did me wrong, but I didn't lose my temper, Lord. I wasn't resentful. I just said to him, friend, I forgive you. And Peter was feeling pretty proud about himself as he narrated his story. But he said, a second time that scoundrel did the same thing. But I didn't get mad and cuss him out. I just looked at him again and I said, friend, I forgive you. And Lord, a third, fourth, fifth, sixth, and seventh time the creep did the same thing. And not once, Lord, did I lose my temper. You would have been proud of me, Lord. That's what the law says. I was to forgive him seven times, and I did. But Peter said all this in such a way as to say, but Lord, if he does it one more time, I'm going to bust his chops. And Jesus knew what was in his heart. Now listen to me. The law was there, and Peter fulfilled the law, but he didn't participate in what the meaning of forgiveness really is. And that's why Jesus said, Peter, Peter, you've got to keep on forgiving. And Peter said, what do you mean, Lord? And Jesus said, you forgive him 70 times seven. That's where the real participation in forgiveness is demonstrated, you see. Now let me tell you what I believe to be one of the most important principles for our own mental and spiritual development. We aren't called upon just to fulfill the law. We don't begin to experience what the intent of the law is until we go beyond the law. That's the point. Forgiveness is one of those areas where this principle can work so wonderfully to the advantage of Christians who are really serious about following Jesus all the way. Psychologists tell us that so many of our physical and mental problems result from the fact that we're not willing to forgive. We hold grudges. We have hostility in our hearts, and anger builds up in us as we contrive ways by which we can get back at someone. USA Today recently had a headline that said, "Hostility as it is measured in a city in America today is directly related to the crime rate and the death rate of that city." In other words, when you have hostility instead of forgiveness, you're going to be in deep trouble. Let me boil this down to where you and I live. There's not one of us here this morning who hasn't been wronged by someone. Some of you have been wronged terribly, and I know it. And we have one of two choices. We can look for ways to get back at that person, or we can simply forgive, at the same time courageously seeking lasting reconciliation with the offender. To harbor resentment only tears us up inside. And Jesus says, the mile of participation is when we're willing and anxious to go beyond what the law demands. We all know that when we forgive people, it's sometimes mighty hard to forget. But we don't need to be always reminding them of what they did. I heard about a man recently who did something very wrong, and he asked his wife to forgive him, which she did. But every time after that, when he did something that displeased her, she would needle him about his past indiscretion. And one day he said, "I thought you said you had forgiven and that you had forgotten." And she said, "I did say that. I have forgiven you, and I have forgotten, but I'm not ever going to let you forget that I've forgotten and forgiven." You see, participation in the mile that means the most is when we don't simply do what is expected of us, but when we magnanimously go beyond it. And take the matter of faith and commitment to Christ. In Luke 9:57-62, Jesus said, in essence, following me is stern business. And one man said, "I'm ready to follow you, Lord." And Jesus said, "Let me remind you, the foxes have holes and the birds of the air have nests, but I don't have a place to lay my head. If you're going to follow me, it involves sacrifice and the second mile." And the man said, "Okay, but first let me go and say goodbye to my family." Another said, "Let me first go and bury my father." And Jesus said, "No, you just haven't gotten it. You don't understand what following me means. Faith and commitment means sacrifice and the second mile." And of course, the finest example of this kind of commitment is the cross itself. Jesus didn't just do what was expected of one person for another person. He died for you and me. And he says, if you want to be my disciple, pick up a cross and follow me daily. The mile that Jesus walked was one in which he gave everything he had so that you and I might have life. And when we talk about faith and commitment, we don't really participate in it until we go that second mile with the Master. And then thirdly, the mile that means the most is the mile of perseverance. The mile of perseverance. There are two great passages in the Gospels that illustrate and exemplify this truth. First of all, in Luke chapter 11, verses 5 through 8, is the parable of the man who had guests arrive unexpectedly at his home late at night, and he had no food to offer the man. And in those days, this was the greatest embarrassment one could experience. They had no refrigeration, so they couldn't lay in food days in advance. And all of a sudden, this man was confronted by these guests. So while the wife entertained them, he hightailed it over to his neighbor's house and hammered on the door. And he shouted, "Do you have any bread?" Now, the neighbor and his family had gone to bed. In fact, we are told that he had already bolted the door. Now, in those days in Palestine, the front door of a house was always left open during the daytime. But if you wanted privacy, you closed the door and you bolted it. Now, in this case, the man had locked the door. He was in bed with his family. Now, the point of the parable is that the man persevered so long in knocking on that bolted door that finally the man inside said, "Hey, I'll give you all the food in the house if you'll just go away." And Jesus was emphasizing the need for perseverance in our prayer life. George Mueller, that great Christian philanthropist of Bristol, England, was a mighty prayer warrior. In his biography, which I encourage you all to read, one of the greatest Christian biographies I've ever read. In his biography, it is told how for 60 years, George Mueller prayed for the conversion of three of his friends, but he died without seeing one of them come to know Christ. However, within 3 months of Mr. Mueller's passing, all three of those men were gloriously born again by the Spirit of God. So, dear friend, I tell you, persevere in your prayers for the salvation of those persons for whom God has given you a deep burden. Keep on praying. Keep on praying. Keep on praying. And then in Luke 18, verses 1 to 8, Jesus makes the same point in the parable about the persistent widow who made an absolute nuisance of herself in confronting an ungodly judge. He finally made sure that she received justice. His own words, I think, are almost amusing. He said, "Although I don't fear God and have no respect for men, yet this woman is such a nuisance that I shall give judgment in her favor, or else her continual visits will be the death of me." Wish we had more judges who would be willing to say that. This woman was tireless. She was tenacious. She never gave up until she received what she was after. She went the second mile of perseverance. You know what happens in life so often? People give up, often at the point when victory is just right around the corner. There is a man with a sledgehammer, and he takes that sledgehammer to a large piece of rock. He strikes it 20 times and it breaks in pieces. Suppose he had given up after 19 blows of the sledge. I read a very interesting thing just this week about Mickey Mantle. Mickey Mantle said, "If you add up my career strikeouts and walks, I played the equivalent of 7 seasons without hitting the ball." Think of that. But he kept on keeping on, and he became a superstar. The mile that means the most is the mile when you go beyond what's expected and you never, never quit. You never give up. It's the mile of perseverance. And then just finally, fourthly, the mile that means the most is the mile that pays off. The mile that pays off. The payoff comes to those who are prepared to go that extra mile. Never forget, dear friend, that God has a purpose for your life. God has something special for you to do. He has a ministry that He wants you to perform that nobody else can perform. And people who practice the mile that means the most all of a sudden discover that they know God's purpose as it is woven into the very basic biblical principle that we're talking about. This afternoon, after you have your lunch, read again the whole of that beautiful 24th chapter of Genesis, where we find a beautiful example of this principle. Rebekah, as Chris read, was the daughter of Bethuel, and one evening she was out at the village well, and as she was drawing water for the family, she is approached by a man who has a lot of camels. And he asked her if she would kindly give him a drink of water from the well. Now the law said that a woman always had to draw water for a man. I blush when I say that. So she fulfilled the law by giving him a drink. But then she did a beautiful thing. She lived by the principle of the second mile. So she said, "Sir, I shall be happy to draw water for your camels also." Now, can you imagine what that meant? Do you realize that those ornery critters, after a trek across the desert, can drink up to 25 gallons of water each? Boy, she did some drawing of water, didn't she? This man had never seen anything like this before, and he asked her what her name was. And she said, "I'm Rebekah." And he said, "I'm the chief servant of Abraham, and I'm looking for a wife for his son Isaac. And I just know that you would be a wonderful partner for this young man." And to make a long story short, she returned with him to the land of Canaan and was married to Isaac. And that put her in the direct lineage of the Lord Jesus Christ Himself. You know why? Because she didn't do just what the law required. She went the extra mile. I heard recently about a youth pastor in a church in the Southland who went out one evening with another young man to visit a teenager who had started coming to the youth group in their church. They went by his house at 7 o'clock, rang the doorbell, and the boy wasn't home. They went back at 8 o'clock, and still he wasn't home. They returned for a third time at 9 o'clock. Still he hadn't come home. And they went down to the Dairy Queen and were drinking a milkshake when the youth pastor said, "Well, I guess it's time to go home." And his friend said, "I thought we were going to visit Tom tonight." "Oh, that's right," said the youth pastor, "but we've been three times and he's not home." "Oh, I didn't understand that," came the reply. "I thought we were going to visit. You know, he's going to come home sometime tonight, and if we park in front of his house, we'll be there when he comes home." So that's what they did. And when that boy came home, they were the right people at the right place at the right time. And God touched that young fellow's life and changed him as he received Jesus as his personal Savior that night. And 15 years later, that same youth pastor now the senior pastor of a large church in this southern town, presided at a great worship service at which that young man was commissioned as a missionary to South America. What if those two men had gone home from the Dairy Queen that night? Thank God they didn't. And look what happened. God's eternal purpose was worked out in a teenager's life. The mile that means the most ended in a glorious payoff. Folks, you can always live to fulfill the law, but you'll never really enjoy it. The first mile is the mile of duty. The second mile is the mile of delight. The first mile is a personal requirement. The second is a glorious privilege, because it's the mile that means the most, isn't it?